You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God is doing there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and this week we get the opportunity to interview Pastor Jonathan McDaniel, coming from Rattan, Oklahoma. And I'm excited to dive into his story. I love just kind of his journey into ministry. He kind of jumped in a little later in life. He's been very persistent in his small town, and I just really love his heart for pastoring and his heart for people. And so before we do that, though, I just want to say, Pastor Jonathan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Glad to be here with you.
Good. Well, we're glad to have you on, man. These conversations are so much fun. You know, we just get to dive into different perspectives on how to do small town church well. And I was excited when we talked on the phone to just kind of learn your story and the lessons that God's taught you on that journey. And so I think that's a good place for us to start. You know, I would just love maybe take, give us the 5-minute flyer, if you will, but tell us kind of where you've been, what you've done, how you get from point A to point B. Maybe you start with, I got saved at a young age, or this is when I went off to this. I mean, just you know, pick a spot and bring us up to present day. Tell us a little bit about where you're at now, you know, that kind of, all that stuff, you know.
Right. I grew up in the town that I pastor in. This community shaped me long before I've ever stepped into ministry, you know, and I came to Christ really out of drugs and alcohol when I was 23 years old, and God had saved me. He changed my life. He transformed me. And about a year and a half later, I'd met my wife and I'd moved to Louisiana. And that season was also important for me, not because it took me away from the rural ministry, because I was still in rural ministry at the time, but because it helped me establish my walk with God. And my walk with God, it taught me responsibility to grow in my faith outside the place, that I was familiar with, you know, up in a small town. And but my heart has always been here. And when God had called me into ministry, I wasn't about going somewhere new. It was about coming back home and serving the people in my community and helped raise me, you know. And so I pastored the church that I got saved in. So a little different.
Yeah, no, that's a different track. Can you talk to me? You mentioned that while you were in Louisiana, you were still kind of doing some ministry. I'm assuming that it was more volunteer, but like, tell me about maybe your church involvement. You know, you get saved, you get married, you're in a new place. Like, how, you know, what did it look like to serve the church? Were you back in Rattan serving before you became the pastor? How long have you been the pastor? Let's go that route, you know?
We stayed in Louisiana. I raised my kids till they were in kindergarten in Louisiana, and I was a youth pastor for about 4 years, I guess, and then I'd become a associate pastor of the church that I was in. So I had been in ministry before I had come
Cool.
Oklahoma. So yes, it was non-denominational. It wasn't Assembly of God
Oh,
ministry.
sure, yeah.
Yeah, so it was.
Well, that's good. And so then you moved back to Rattan. Did you become the pastor right away? Like, did you move back
Nope.
to lead pastor?
Oh, it was probably 9 years that I served, just serving and filling in where I could and doing whatever it took, you know, being faithful in ministry. Just, you know, sometimes faithful in ministry is cleaning toilets and
Yeah.
things like that, really getting
Yeah.
into the nitty gritty stuff, you know. And but God, and I had become a deacon for about 2 years before I had become the pastor of the church. So, yeah, so it's just a journey.
Nice.
It's been less about chasing opportunity and more about being faithful in where God has placed me, you
Man.
know.
Yeah, that's a great one-liner. I think even if, well, I mean, we won't end the conversation because I'm excited to chat with you, but that's a great thought, man. It is true how often we kind of view it as chasing opportunity, but really it's just like, man, can I show up and just love where I'm at?
Can I just be faithful where God has placed me? And
Yeah.
whatever aspect that is, I think that's an area where God, that's where he takes you from. He just grows you in your walk with him and in your maturity and in your life and spiritual maturity and things like that. I mean,
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit, how long have you served as the lead pastor of Rattan? And can you tell me, or Rattan, I get, I'm always trying to figure out how to say it. But then can you tell me stuff about the church and the community? I mean, not the size is the only thing that matters, but what's the church like? How many people are there? How long has the church been around? What's the community like? Just give us some context.
Well, the community is, it's small. The census is 280. That was in 2023, but I think it's more than that now. A little over 300 people that in the community.
So a thriving metropolis, really.
But our church, we run, I guess we have about 20, we were average about 120 people on Sunday. So God has been faithful. He's, I don't know,
Yeah.
it's just been great.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely exciting. I obviously none of us like to brag about our context because we want to give credit for the Lord. But anybody who crunches those numbers, goes, man, 120 people attending a church in a an area of 300 plus is cool. It's just exciting to see that God's done that and like.
Planning a city, and I'm planning on building a building and stuff like that. Building a youth center. I'm gonna call it Victory Center. So
Nice. Like
they
a
could
like
have
almost like a community use center.
like a community building where they could have a little half court gym in it and stuff, and
Nice. Yeah, I
youth room.
actually, I mean, not to interject this, but I in my small town of 1200, I got to run a youth center for like ministry for about 9 years when I was youth pastor. It was some of the most fulfilling years of just like getting to be with students and like do all that. That's great.
Having a place where they can come, because we don't have all that buildings everywhere,
Yeah, it's
so
true. No, that's exciting, man. I love the vision and the heart. It's exciting when God brings growth, and now you're thinking, how do we turn that back into community impact? But I do want to kind of throw this at you, just because as we walk through some thoughts and questions, because what I often encounter is that God will take us through like seasons of life where we're just gaining skills, we're faithfully serving. There's all these like. I call them puzzle pieces where you're just not sure what the picture is, but there's all these pieces. But you spent like whole seasons of your life. Obviously, not only did you not get saved till maybe, young adulthood, but then you say, hey, I was, a youth pastor for 4 years, but then I was just back in Rattan, just kind of serving and volunteer basis. Now you're back in ministry. But like, how important is this time in your life and how does these seasons prepare you for ministry? Like, how close is that connection? Kind of dive into that.
Not every season is a platform season.
Oh, really? Sure.
Not every season's a platform season, and that's something I've learned. Just I had times where it wasn't just I wasn't in full-time ministry, but I also felt God working in my life, in those areas of my life. Looking back, those seasons were necessary for me because they taught me how to follow Jesus, and when nobody's watching, when nobody's watching, because when you're a small town pastor, you live in a glass house and
Yeah.
everybody's watching. And how to serve without a title, How to serve without a title, how to be faithful in everyday responsibilities like life, your family, being a father, being a husband, being a and work, being responsible in your work and your character. God's timing is perfect. His timing is perfect. And if he would have put me in ministry earlier, I wouldn't have been ready for it. There were things that I needed to grow in first, and patience, humility, consistency,
Sure.
and just spiritual maturity before you try to lead anybody else. You've got to, those things need to be developed in you. And those seasons also gave me compassion for other people when I ministered to them, knowing that they've went through the same thing that I've went through. And I'm a person that's worked a regular job. I worked in the oil field, being a
Yeah.
derrick hand in the oil field, and paper mills. I've been out there, and I've lived real life outside of the church office. And
Yeah.
when God finally opens the door for ministry, you got to step into it, and you got to recognize it's not something that you've earned. It's something that God has prepared you for over time, and
Yeah.
growing, maturing you. So,
Yeah,
and that's
no. I hope people are listening well to that, 'cause I mean just one after another. I mean even I'm still stuck at the beginning of your thought of man, not every season's a platform season. Like if we can run with that, like oh my gosh, I think we'll do so much better.
Yeah. It's their learning seasons, their learning situations that God puts you in to prepare you for ministry.
Yeah, it's true that he wastes nothing really. You know, I love how you're saying, hey, I'm not working a job in the oil field. I am growing in compassion and relating to people and just showing up in environments that don't always honor God, you know, and the kind of pastor you become from that feels a little different. It feels like you're someone of the sheep, of the people, if you will, you know.
You smell like sheep.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. I know when we talked on the phone, you mentioned this idea of kind of persistence, right? And I think this comes up a lot in a small town. You know, I think that there are plenty of stories of people who say, man, I'm a pastor in a small town. I'm trying to reach the community, but there's these inevitable roadblocks. And even if you're from there, there's just kind of the inertia of a small town. There's this rhythm to it where you're going, man, do I, you know, when can I finally say I've talked to the right person the right amount of times in the right place to move the ball forward, you know? And so, but it's also very discouraging, you know, like if you're someone who, especially, you know, I remember when I came into small town ministry, I was coming in as like full outsider, you know, like not from here, not grew up in a town of 300. I was grown up in a larger place. And so I felt that discouragement of like trying to push through a community that wasn't ready to kind of welcome me in yet. But even if you're from there, you know, I think this themes of we got to be persistent, but we got to overcome discouragement. How do you strengthen yourself in the Lord? How do you keep trying? How important is persistence? I mean, just unpack that for us.
Rural ministry, from what I've learned, it requires a lot of patience.
Sure.
A lot of patience. Things rarely happen overnight. And the most growth you see is gradual, and it's relational growth. And in a small town, you don't get to hide. Like I said, you live in a glass house, and
Yeah.
you do life with the people that you preach to. And you see them in Walmart. You don't get to hide from them. You see them in Walmart, at the ball fields, at the cafe, and sometimes the closeness can make ministry, it can make ministry feel slower and even discouraging sometimes when results don't happen immediately, when you don't see things move fast enough, you know what I'm saying? But persistence to me is rooted in remembering why you do this. You do this. I'm not serving for quick results. I'm serving because God has called me to love these people and to
Yeah.
preach the gospel, whether I feel it feels fruitful right now or not, you know.
Yeah.
And when discouragement shows up, you try to focus on the small wins, you know, see the people growing in the Lord, watching families return to church, someone taking spiritual steps, teenagers opening up about their faith and giving testimonies, and those things are small wins, or people giving testimony where God had healed them. And you think about those things where God brought you over to your life, knowing that He's planted you right here in this moment for a reason. And it's not my church, it's His church. So we continue to keep your eyes
Yeah.
on that. If He wants it to grow, He's going to grow it. You
Yeah.
know, and then those things keep us motivated to keep knowing that we're doing the right thing and we're moving forward for the kingdom of God and trying to reach souls. And I also reminded myself that the Holy Spirit is working even when I can't see it.
Yeah, it really I really love when you say like, you know, it's kind of these beliefs or these motivations, 'cause it seems like, you know, again, just unpacking your words, it's like, man, there's obviously some deeply held beliefs that motivate you. You know, you're saying, hey, I do believe that God's at work. I do believe that small wins matter. I do believe that persistence pays off, you know. Do you have any cool stories by chance of moments where you really felt like persistence did pay off? You know, do you have any, I mean, you know, maybe names redacted or something, you know, in case somebody listens,
I
but
mean, a lot.
any moments where you're like, man, in the last year, last 6 months, I've really seen fruit from this. Like, I'd love to hear about it.
I mean, just staying faithful. You know, not when I first took this church, not everybody wanted me. Just say,
Sure.
you know, in a small town, coming from the church, you know, coming from the community that I was raised up in, you know, a lot of people seen
Yeah,
before
I
John.
suppose that would be tough.
Yeah. And so, and but that's also a good thing because it knows that God's transforming power in your life, and
Yeah.
that consistency to show them consistency over and over that, man, God has changed this man. You know, God has done a work in his life, and He's transformed him, and And I think those things that be just being consistent, being faithful, and showing up every day, showing up to events with the ball games, and just being faithful, man, it just shows you that really it's amazing to watch people grow in the Lord from what God is using you. And you're like, wow, what is it? I feel so humbled by, and ministry in a small town isn't about doing something once. It's about doing things over and over and over again, being consistent. So,
Wow, that's really, gosh, I'm telling you, your one-liners are on point today, Jonathan. I really appreciate it. One thing you said on the phone that I really loved is you talked about people watching, right? Which is not a revolutionary concept. But you put it in this context of, we were talking about what is it like to raise up leaders in the church? How do you, because I mean, obviously, there's not a staff of six pastors hankering to move to a
Absolutely not.
church of, whatever in a town of 300. Like, it's just not real, And so instead, you got to start to have these eyes that go, well, who can I put in charge of this ministry? And whose heart is kind of ready for the next step? And so I phrased it this way. How do you kind of people watch with a purpose, or how do you people watch with an eye for God's potential? Because I think that, sometimes if you're really good at it, you think, oh, this is a skill everyone has, but not everybody's good at doing this, And so how do we raise up leaders? How do we see potential? Why don't you tell us some of your process and some of your thoughts,
I think raising up leaders is it starts with seeing people the God the way that God sees them. A lot of people, they don't recognize their own potential, and especially in small towns where you don't have all that, like the pastors, you don't have the huge staff. All my staff voluntary, it's I mean. A lot of people don't recognize their own potential, and especially in small towns, when you're growing up around the same people your whole lives, you've seen them all the time. And sometimes folks think that I'm not a leader. You've heard that before. I'm not a leader.
Oh yeah, I could never do that. I can never do what you do.
I can't do what you do. But simply because nobody's ever called them out on it, it's actually gave them the opportunity. So I watch their character more than their talent, their faithfulness and their humility and their willing heart, how they treat people, their consistency. If someone who serves without expecting attention, you pay attention to who is already showing up early, things like that. Who has an influence with others, who carries spiritual maturity, and who is growing in their walk with God. And that's things that I watch. And then you give, and when you find out all those things, when you believe that the Holy Spirit's telling you, man, this person be a good they're faithful and you can trust them, then I give them an opportunity to serve and to grow and to even to give messages, and not big ones at first. It might be just to a small group or something, or a Bible or the high school Sunday school class or something like that, and if they don't, that's how I develop leaders. You don't develop leaders by handing out titles. You just don't. You develop them by walking with them, encouraging them, and letting them step into responsibility while being there, guiding them and giving them encouragement and directing them, man. Leadership development is really about discipleship. That's what it's about, discipleship. It's noticing where God is already working in their life and trying to help them move to that next step, what God wants.
Absolutely.
That's what our role is, to nurture what God has already planted inside them and to try to pull that out.
No,
And
absolutely. I think how often we use that phrase, leadership development, and truthfully, what we're saying is like, yeah, we're talking about Christian development. We're talking about people who love the
absolutely.
Lord, because truthfully, all Christians are called at some point to not just be poured into but pour out, and so we're just saying, hey, we see God at work in you. Can you multiply that work in the lives of others,
And I've seen a lot of people with the gift of gab that don't need to be in leadership.
it's true. It's true. The smooth
know?
talkers, it's nice to have if you got the rest of it, but when all that's gone, it's just like, man, that's tough. Well, hey, kind of continue on the theme. You know, we mentioned this briefly, this whole shepherds smell like sheep, but obviously, again, we are, especially as pastors, there's this constant pressure, and some of it's really good pressure to continue growing your skills, growing as we know we talk about as a leader and whatever. But also, sometimes we're taking cues from all sorts of sources. We're trying to be better leaders from a business perspective or from an organization perspective or from all these different perspectives. But truthfully, pastoring is shepherding. And so, in your own words, not the first to ever describe this concept, but I'd love to hear your take. What is servant leadership? What does effective shepherding look like? Kind of your way of being as a pastor,
Well, Jesus, he modeled shepherding, he modeled it by serving other people and not by demanding to be served, And I believe that sets the standard for ministry is Jesus. He's the one that sets the standard. And in a rural church, people can spot ego and entitlement a while. They can spot it a mile away, Can see it, and they don't respond to position. They respond to authentic people. And servant leadership means leading them from a place of humility, loving them well, and being willing to do things that nobody sees. Effective shepherding looks like knowing your people. It's checking on families during the week, praying for them, going to hospital visits, even if they don't even come to your church, you're just being pastoring the community, it's just stepping out of your own little congregation you have and reaching out to other people, just being the hands and feet of Jesus extended to a lost and a broken world, and it's feeding people spiritually with the word, protecting them from false teaching and or division, man. That's something that'll come in like a flood if you don't watch it, and guiding them toward spiritual growth. A shepherd doesn't drive the flock from behind, he leads them from the front. He leads, he walks with them through life.
No, that's great, man. I really love your take on that. Obviously, again, it's healthy in our lives to deflect to the Lord and say, "Well, he did that, so I guess I should probably do that," But I also love what you said. I think every place is kind of like this, but especially small towns kind of ramp it up to 1,000, where it's like, man, somebody comes in with some form of agenda or position or. It just doesn't hit. People just go, yeah, it's fine. You can go somewhere else. It's just send you on down, to the next town over.
I call them recycled Christians. You'll have these people that you see and you call down the road 12 miles. Oh, so and so showed up your church. Yeah, he came. They just recycle. They come through and they come to the next church and the next church and the next church. And
Yeah, I remember a couple of families like that. And it's tough because, like, in a small town, I mean, all these pastors know each other. It's not like we're not going to
They
know
all
them.
know each
It's not like we're not going to see the car in the parking lot, Well, hey, I kind of wanted this on a, practical note, just something that you had mentioned over the phone that I really enjoyed. You talked about the importance of viewing your church building as a community space. And I do want you to dive in. I think you told me. And this is no disrespect to anybody or any part of the journey of Rattan Assembly, but like you mentioned that kind of when you took over, there was a different view on the church building that you tried to really bring some new life to. And so I just think that was such a valuable lesson. Could you just give us a little bit of the context and then tell us kind of how you treat your church building now,
Well, I'll just be honest. Our church is probably the nicest building in the town, and
Nice.
so in a small town, the church building is more than just a place that we meet on Sunday morning. It's a resource that God has given us to serve our community, and we don't have like big arenas or anything like that,
Sure,
or
yeah.
large event centers or endless public spaces like a lot of churches have or a lot of towns have. A church can become a hub for community and ministry and just community life, when you open up your doors, you host meals, you youth activities, weddings, meetings, celebrations, funerals, all that stuff needs to be, I believe, and if they're in your community, you need to allow them to have a have a funeral there, and even if they don't come to your church, because if you want to, and don't charge them,
Yeah, there you go.
and community events, all that stuff. And it's not just being hospitable, it's a building that you can earn trust with your community by doing that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if I
And
remember right, you said that when you took over, it wasn't necessarily that way as often.
no, it was more if you don't pay tithes, if you don't come to church here, then you can't
Sure.
use that building,
Well,
and so.
and do you have any examples? I mean, anything off the top of your head where you're like, man, I remember this event that we did and just, had this great fruit. Like, I just love to hear a story of like, man, here's something we've hosted that just was such a win for our community or for our church.
We do a big fall harvest every year, and we have upwards of 500 people just come through.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we throw a big one, and doing that, I haven't really seen any growth in our church from it,
Sure.
but I love doing it. It just shows you're earning trust in your community,
Yeah.
saying that this, and maybe one day you'll see some fruit from it. But remember, it's always you got to be patient in rural
Yeah, I was
ministry.
just gonna call back to that. I was like, yeah, no, it is this
Patient.
most like intangible thing where like I remember one time this I'd been in my small town about 9 years, it was a few months before I left, unfortunately, and pursued a different position. But I'd been there 9 years. I had anticipated sticking around long term. The Lord has other plans, of course, but this couple had come up to me and just said, we've been watching you for a while and we want to make a donation to the youth center. And I'm like, a while? Like, I've been here almost a decade. Like, you now, like, it was this weird, like, intangible building of trust that culminated suddenly, in this, like, gift and donation and this kind of supportive ministry. And it's just funny how often, that happens, like even more than other places. Because I think sometimes in a larger place, churches are going to have meetings and say things like, well, we've been doing this outreach to the community, but it's not netting this result or that result. And that's fine. Like if that's the conversation you have to have in your church, that's fine. We're not condemning that. But in a
No.
small town, it's not always as easy to see the quote return on investment, but you're still kind of called to do good, right? I mean, would that be something you'd say?
Yes, absolutely. People may feel comfortable walking into your event long before they walk into your worship service,
Yeah.
So if you can get them feeling comfortable being around the church, and the people, and so long before you ever get them into a worship service, I think you're doing something, as long as they know that you love them
Yeah.
and that you care. And man, I think it's fruitful in the long run, I believe. I think it'll pay off. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, Pastor Jonathan, I want to say thanks today, man. Like, this has been such a lovely conversation. I'm going to be chewing on it the rest of the day. I'm very excited about it. But yeah,
Absolutely.
thanks for being on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Well, hey, from all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to say again, we hope that you're leaving this conversation equipped and empowered. We want you to know that not only does God see you doing all the things that nobody else sees, not only does God know exactly where you live, he has your address tracked down, but there are dozens, hundreds, thousands of other people ministering faithfully in small towns who are walking this journey right alongside you. As always, you can find us on ruraladvancement.com or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, but true to rural form, the best way to spread this podcast around is just to find another rural leader and say, hey, I got some conversations I think you'd really love to hear. But for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Jonathan McDaniel, and we will see you next week.